up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello, and once again, welcome to the program. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Today we talk to Ricky Chaplin, who is an advocacy officer with Blind Citizens Australia, and we're going to be talking all about the federal election. Hello, Rick, and welcome back to the program.
G'day, Vaughan. Great to talk to you again.
Blind Citizens Australia has been doing some work around the federal election. Why don't you start by going into that?
Yep, sure. Well, I think as Leah has spoken about before on the program, we have four key election priorities, and those are the inequity between the NDIS and aged care or my aged care systems. Then we have, of course, the restoration of federal funding to Blind Citizens Australia and other diagnostic-specific disability organisations. Then we have the NDIS itself and, of course, audio description as well. We really want to see that continue in its current form, but, of course, also brought to television in real time. That's been a major frustration of people over quite some years since the ABC trial back in 2013 or so. So, we really want to push those four key priority areas with the election coming up. Yeah, so we've released a series of campaign letters. There are two options for each of those four topics that I mentioned. So first, there's one that has the BCA letterhead on it, and you can simply sign that and send it to the relevant minister for that portfolio and to your local member, and then we have one that doesn't have the BCA letterhead on it, but it sort of is it's a template, and it highlights the issue concerned and talks about, you know, why it's important to have it resolved and outlines what it's all about. But there's room in it also for people to add their personal stories. And we think this is really important, because if you can talk to a politician about how a particular issue affects you personally, it's going to be a lot more powerful than just, you know, any old campaign letter that comes in, because politicians get campaign letters from all over the place, and so you've really got to sort of make the letter stand out, if you like. And we think that adding personal stories is going to be a really good way of doing that.
So how can people use those?
It's a matter of sending a campaign letter, whichever particular version of it you choose, to either your local member of parliament or the key minister covering that portfolio. We have also on the website a list of the key ministers' contact details, both the shadow minister and the actual minister for that particular area. So you can use those contact details to send either that BCA letterhead version of the letter or the unsigned version. And just add your personal story, as I said.
And we just get them from the BCA website?
Yes, that's right. Or, of course, you can contact the office if you don't have internet access, and we can post one out to you.
Is there a way to feature all of those campaign ideas in the one letter?
We haven't done that. We thought it was going to be better to target individual issues rather than put the four issues together into one letter, because, you know, as it is, the letters are two or three pages long, and you want your messages to politicians to be short and sharp so it grabs their attention. So I think, you know, if you put too much into one letter, it may just go over their head and they may stop reading it. And of course, yeah, that that kind of achieves the exact opposite.
Absolutely. Let's go into some of the issues in a little bit more detail. Let's talk first of all, because we haven't mentioned for some time, about the funding shortfall for Blind Citizens Australia. What are you proposing that the government do about that?
We're asking that the government restore federal funding to, as I said before, diagnostic-specific agencies. So what they've chosen to do is they've targeted what they call population-based disability groups. So disability groups that have a kind of overarching level of advocacy, but don't necessarily have the intimate knowledge of particular types of disability. That was the advantage of funding diagnostic-specific organisations is that, you know, we could talk in detail to federal government about Braille, for example. We could talk about orientation and mobility and how important that was. We could talk about the specific issues related to unemployment and why that was occurring. So, yeah, we'd really like to see that happen. We do have a commitment from Labor, who have said that they would restore that funding. So we're looking to try and campaign to go back to that model of funding that we had prior to that being removed in 2015.
How does that work in terms of the NDIS, do you think?
That's a really good question. I think it's something that just about every agency is trying to work out at the moment, because there will be a component of the NDIS which is called information linkages and capacity building. And there may be some scope for us to do some work in there, but they have just completed consultations on what that element of the NDIS is even going to look like. So at this point, it is a bit unclear as to how that's going to all play out.
The other issue is, of course, the disparity between the NDIS and My Aged Care. And we have talked about this on a number of occasions on the program, but just to refresh people's minds for when they fill out their campaign letters, what would you say about that?
I guess the best way of clarifying it is if you could imagine two people standing with guide dogs on the street. One might be 63 and eligible for the NDIS. The other person might be 66 and not eligible for the NDIS. The big difference is going to be that under the NDIS, a person will receive that full support for the costs of their guide dog. So, for example, food, vet bills, that kind of thing. Whereas under the My Aged Care system, if indeed a person does get support for the cost of their guide dog, they're still going to have to lodge a co-payment for that. So it's not, in fact, free support for the disability-specific issues that occur. And the age cutoff is discriminatory in the sense that disability can occur at any point of life and it's not caused by age. So that's the real issue here. So that's why we're asking for an equal system that covers disability supports at any age, and that, you know, we're arguing that age should not be regarded as a cutoff point or, you know, an issue of difference.
And I think you hit the nail on the head when you called it discriminatory. I think it doesn't matter which way you look at it. It's a basic human right, and if you provide it for some, you must provide it for all. Otherwise, I'd argue that it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, we're looking into some ways that we might be able to challenge this legally at the moment. So I'm sure that Leah will be able to update you when we're sort of ready to go ahead with that. But yeah, it's an issue of major concern to us for that reason. And we're certainly looking to challenge it no matter what the outcome of the election is.
Well, let's move on now to the NDIS itself. You did mention that there were some issues relating to that which appear in the campaign letters. What are those?
I guess there have been some inconsistencies regarding what kinds of things people are supported to get. So, for example, some people have been able to get iPhones without any problem. Other people have really struggled to get that through and to argue why that's important. So we want to see a level of consistency about the kinds of technology that that the NDIS will fund for people who are blind or vision impaired. I guess we want people working in the system to have a knowledge of the kinds of supports that we need, so that, you know, we don't have to try and argue our way through as to why, you know, we should be provided with a Thermomix, for example, or, you know, why an iPhone's so important to being able to work to our full capacity, I guess.
And what about audio description? We talked about audio description being available on free-to-air television. Also, the continuation of the iView trial. Is that where it ends?
We know that people are having inconsistent experiences with cinemas as well. So, I mean, the whole issue of audio description really does need to be continued to be promoted, I guess. So there's no certainty at this point following the end of the ABC iView trial in July as to what's going to happen. So, yeah, that's the first thing, I guess, that we need to advocate to have continued. It's clear that it works. And as you said, that survey that people can complete is very important. And we need to give really positive responses on that survey so that we get the message through loud and clear that, hey, this is something that's very important to us. The argument for audio description on TV is one that's very important to push as well. I mean, so many people have raised the issue with us of, well, why can't I sit with my family and watch the television at the same time and have the audio description track on? Why do I have to go and sit at the computer or use my iPhone and catch up later and not be able to enjoy to the full extent the same show that my family might be enjoying? We've really got to get that message across to the federal government, whoever it may be, after the federal election.
And what sort of momentum are you hoping to build up with these campaign letters? How many are you expecting or would you like to actually appear on politicians' doorsteps?
Well, we have a membership of, you know, 3,000-odd people. So, you know, it'd be wonderful if every one of those members, plus people who aren't members, because, you know, they can access those campaign letters as well from the BCA website. You know, it'd be great if as many people as possible could send those campaign letters. And, you know, some people won't have the time necessarily to write their personal stories into the letters, as we talked about before, but just a signed copy even, you know, that's going to have some impact. And we did see in the past when we had the postcard campaign with audio description that was effective. So, you know, we know that these letters, if they turn up in their hundreds and thousands on politicians' doorsteps, do have an effect. It's a bit like that scene in Harry Potter, you know, where all the letters came in through the window and, you know, flooded the whole house. That's the kind of effect we'd love to see, of course. But we appreciate that people don't necessarily have time to put a huge amount of effort into these things. But, you know, if you can just send off that signed copy even, we hope it's going to make a real difference.
Now, I know that everybody's waiting to hear about the elephant in the room, and that is accessible voting. Are we to have accessible voting in this election?
Yes, we are. We're going to have phone-assisted voting. The details for that are on the Australian Electoral Commission's website. But yes, it'll be a similar process to previous elections where you call in first, you get a PIN. It can be either texted to you, emailed to you, or posted to you, whichever you'd prefer. Or you can even get a phone call back, I believe, and they can give you that PIN over the phone. And then when you're ready to vote, you call in, you enter that PIN, and an operator will assist you to lodge your vote.
So it's completely secret because the operator who receives your PIN doesn't actually know who you are. And I believe that there's assistance available at some of the polling booths as well.
Yes, there will be. That's right. Yeah, staff will be trained in how to assist people if you choose to go to a polling booth and lodge a vote that way.
Telephone voting. Can you do it on polling day or do you have to pre-vote?
You can do it on polling day, but it is open from, I believe, the 13th of June. So you can do it any time up to the election and on the polling day itself.
Excellent. So we are heading towards a time of accessible voting, so there's no excuses. People, get in and get your votes cast. And Rick, thanks very much for joining us in the program this week.
Thank you, Vaughan.
Ricky Chaplin there with Blind Citizens Australia talking about the federal election and BCA's election priorities. Now, I did promise you the phone number for the assisted voting at the end of the program. However, that phone number has not yet been published. So I would urge that you look at the Electoral Commission website, aec.gov.au. That's aec.gov.au, and I'm sure that within time that will be published. I did just read from the website that the telephone assisted voting system starts on the 13th of June for voter registration, and to actually cast your vote you can do so from the Tuesday morning, the 14th of June. So I'm sure that number will be published any day. Listen to your RPH station for more information on that, and assuming I get the information, I shall put it in next week's program for you. But as I said, check the Australian Electoral Commission website. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Thanks for your company this week. I'll be back again next week. But in the meantime, you can contact Blind Citizens Australia by email on bca@bca.org.au or by telephone on 1-800-033-660. Don't forget that your donations are always welcome, so check the Blind Citizens Australia website or call the Blind Citizens Australia office if you would like more information. Take care until next week. We'll achieve the real